From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin. We'll start tonight with a recall of Texas-made Bluebell ice cream. Three people in Kansas died of listeriosis after eating certain frozen treats. Two others were sickened. The FDA is reporting the bacteria was found in samples of Bluebell chocolate chip country cookies, Great Divide bars, Sour Pop green apple bars, and several other products. The people who got sick ate the ice cream while in the hospital for unrelated reasons. Dallas police have arrested a 17-year-old suspect in the murder of an Iraqi refugee who was gunned down last week as he was outside enjoying the snow. KERA's Stella Chavez has this update.
For the past week, Dallas police and the local Muslim community have been asking for help in finding 36-year-old Ahmed Al-Jamali's killer. He'd never seen snow and had only been in the U.S. 20 days after fleeing the violence of his native country. But his new life in America was cut short when he was shot and killed in the parking lot of his far northeast Dallas apartment complex. Today, Dallas Police Major Jeff Cotner told reporters that a witness and other evidence led to the arrest of Nykeria Nealon, who didn't know Al-Jamali.
We don't believe that he knew Mr. Al-Jamali. We don't believe he knew Mr. Al-Jamali's ethnicity.
Cotner says that a witness told Richardson police that the person responsible for killing Al-Jamali goes by the nickname Keika. That tip helped police identify Nealon, whom they later questioned.
Nealon provided a conflicting story, placing himself at the murder scene, but he blamed the shooting on the witness, or on a witness, rather.
According to police, Nealon said he was at his girlfriend's place on the night of March 4th when someone allegedly shot at her apartment. When police initially questioned him, Nealon denied leaving his girlfriend's apartment following the alleged shooting. But a witness says Nealon and three others went out looking for the alleged perpetrators. That's when he came upon Al-Jamali, his wife and brother, who were taking photographs in the snow.
And when he saw Mr. Al-Jamali and his family, he targeted them, he shot at them with intent, and that as Mr. Al-Jamali ran back towards his apartment, the breezeway, he tracked him with the rifle and continued to fire.
Aliyah Salem, executive director of the local Council on American Islamic Relations, says Al-Jamali's wife and family are relieved by the arrest. She says they believe this is the first step in seeing justice served. However, nothing can erase their pain.
It is a shocking irony that he would come, leave such horrific violence and come to this country only to be gunned down within less than a month.
And his home in Iraq was far more dangerous than North Texas.
You're literally living amongst terrorists, living amongst extreme violence that none of us, I would argue, have even come close to witnessing.
Salem says a long road remains ahead for the family. So far, more than $30,000 has been raised for the family. Stella Chavez, KERA News.
Hundreds of thousands of people are expected tomorrow for the annual Dallas St. Patrick's Parade. Nearly 100 floats and thousands of participants will be lining up for the 36th annual parade on a 2-mile route along Greenville Avenue. The event is billed as the largest parade in the Southwest. Kevin Vela chairs the Greenville Avenue Area Business Association, which organizes the event.
From what we can tell, there's no official numbers on it. We think we're somewhere between the 5th and the 10th largest parade in the country on this thing. And we get visitors from all over the place. You know, it's not uncommon for me to run into people and they say, oh, my family comes in from out of town, or my friends come up from Austin or Houston or wherever it is to come to the parade. So it really is a citywide event.
A lot of hands are involved with an operation this size.
The volunteers are awesome. They come every year, and we have volunteers that are lining the float entry area, lining the parade, helping people exit. But then, of course, we have costs built into things, and we have sponsorship dollars, and we charge people for entering floats into the parade. We have a great relationship with the Dallas Police Department. They're very involved in our planning process. We hire other cleaning and security crews. They're already out. They've been out there since last night, putting up barriers, posting signs.
The parade is planning to include a fleet of food trucks, a brew fest, some family-friendly spots, and the Dallas Mavericks. Several roads will be closed to accommodate the parade, and traffic will likely be backed up. And Vela has one important suggestion.
Take DART. There's three service stations that are great. You can get off at Park Lane with a little bit of a walk. You get off at Lover's, which is right in the middle of the parade. And then you can get off at Mockingbird Station and have a little bit of a walk. The parade will go on, you know, rain, snow, sleet, ice, whatever it is. The parade will be going on.
The parade starts at 11 tomorrow morning, and Vela suggests showing up early if you want to nab a good spot. For a look at the parade route and other details, go to DallasSt.PatricksParade.com. The Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth has opened a new exhibit of photography and video called Framing Desire. It's a big show with 115 works by dozens of different artists. It also includes over 40 recent museum acquisitions. Andrea Carnes, curator for The Modern, talked to KERA's Jeff Whittington about the show and the new additions to the museum's collection.
Andrea Carnes, welcome.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm happy to be talking to you.
There's quite a range in the show, including over 40 new acquisitions. Isn't that kind of a big deal for The Modern?
It is a big deal for The Modern. We started collecting photography before we moved into our new building, so that was over 12 years ago. Because we had other things on the agenda in the new building, we kind of put photography on the side burner for the last decade. We didn't really mean to do that. We want to continue to collect photography and video. So we knew it was high time for another big push. So we just wanted to do it in a big way. For example, we just purchased a work for the collection by Candida Hoffer, and she's part of the Dusseldorf School in Germany. And we have every other photographer who's part of that school, except we did not have her work. So we were kind of acknowledging, you know, holes in the collection in that sense with a few of the works. And then we also wanted to get some works that are considered historical anchors for fine art photography, like the Larry Clark portfolio that we purchased. Just certain things that we felt would really be important to contextualize what we already had.
I want you to describe the Candida Hoffer piece that you have in the show, because it's a massive photograph and there isn't anybody in it.
Well, that's the point. So that photograph by Candida Hoffer, it depicts a library in Florence. So it's basically a place for knowledge. And some of the works in that library, some of the books and manuscripts are handwritten manuscripts, illuminated manuscripts. And Hoffer really wanted to make this straightforward portrait of the room using the natural light in the room, but in such a way that it's like a portrait, but without a human presence. So it speaks to history, basically, the history of the people who have been in that room, the history of knowledge, you know, the history of human knowledge. So that really is, I mean, in a nutshell, what she had in mind, and it's what she often does in her work.
Now, there's one piece which provides a sort of cool soundtrack for the first half of the exhibition. It includes a performance by a band called The National. Let's hear a little bit of their song, Sorrow.
Sorrow found me when I was young.
This piece is actually by an Icelandic performance artist, Ragnar Kjartansson. What's the story behind it?
Ragnar is a combination videographer and performance artist, and he's very interested in the idea of sadness and sorrow. So Ragnar approached The National and asked them to do a marathon performance of that song, Sorrow, repeatedly for 6 hours straight in front of an audience. It also, you know, became a video, which is the final form. I mean, I think of it as the artist Ragnar Kjartansson's own desire to hear the song over and over on repeat because he can't get enough of it. I also think of it as the band's durational task of getting through that performance for 6 hours straight, and then the crowd's desire to be a part of that performance and to cheer the band on and be a part of a concert that lasts 6 hours where you only hear one song. So, well, the piece is called A Lot of Sorrow. So there's a little humor in it as well.
Andrea Carnes is curator at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth. Andrea Carnes, thanks again for taking the time.
Thank you, Jeff.
Framing Desire is on view at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth until August 23rd. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin.
Cover me in rag and bone. Sympathy, 'cause I don't